This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.
For all of the people that will be coming into Jacksonville and how they're going to handle the crowds and so forth. And so finally, the sheriff just pretty much said, we aren't capable of doing this.
Florida Congressman Al Lawson says Trump's cancellation of the Republican National Convention in Jacksonville is a sign that he's finally understanding the pandemic.
I think only this week has he begun to kind of look at things the way they are going.
With Election Day on the horizon, candidates like Albert Chester for Congress explains how he would tackle the most pressing issues in Washington.
We should go on another shutdown. To a degree where you're only going to get essentials. Make sure everybody has their mask on.
And South Florida's Elijah Manley, candidate for State House District 94, says he's ready to bring some change to Tallahassee.
I'm not happy with the discussion in Tallahassee or with the way the discussion is framed in Tallahassee around certain issues like climate change, healthcare.
All of that and more coming up on episode 174 of The Rotunda. Some say President Donald Trump's decision to cancel the Republican National Convention in Jacksonville is a sign that he's starting to come to terms about the seriousness of the pandemic. Holding the convention in Jacksonville would require Florida Governor Ron DeSantis to lift his executive order requiring big sports venues to operate at no more than 50% capacity, all while COVID-19 cases and deaths continue to rise in the Sunshine State. Florida Congressman Al Lawson, whose district includes Jacksonville, says it was clear the president couldn't ensure the safety and security of convention goers.
Sheriff Williams, they were not prepared for all of the people that will be coming into Jacksonville and how they're going to handle the crowds and so forth. And so finally, the sheriff just pretty much said, we aren't capable of doing this.
Jacksonville's Republican Mayor Lenny Curry agreed his city was not ready, but he's facing criticism for leaving the decision to cancel up to Trump instead of himself. Congressman Al Lawson is our first guest on this week's program. We'll talk about some topical items in the news and then dive into discussions about his time in office representing the 5th Congressional District, spanning Jacksonville to Tallahassee, and why he's seeking re-election. More on the pandemic. Lawson says America is where it is today because Trump didn't take the virus seriously enough to properly prepare.
I think only this week has he begun to kind of look at things the way they are going.
In front of reporters, Representative Yoho called me, and I quote, a bitch. These are the words that Representative Yoho levied against a congresswoman.
Your colleague from New York, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she spoke up after she was accosted by Florida Congressman Ted Yoho. What do you make of that situation there? And should there be some sort of official apology?
Well, I think it should be an apology. She is a very bright young lady. I've gotten to be friends with her. You know, we serve on committees together, and she's very serious about the group that she represents out of New York. And I know she gets a lot of publicity because she's very progressive, but a very good individual. I mean, someone that that works every day to try to make life better for people.
Having been married for 45 years with 2 daughters, I'm very cognizant of my language. The offensive name calling words attributed to me by the press were never spoken to my colleagues, and if they were construed that way, I apologize for their misunderstanding.
But what does this mean for Representative Ted Yoho, your colleague, your closest colleague, like from Florida, and to see this happen in such a way?
I don't know. I think he must have been having a bad day. You know, I work with him. I've had in a prior, we serve on an agricultural committee together. We collaborate oftentimes on issues that affect IFAS, University of Florida, and agricultural issues, and I was just quite surprised about the exchange.
So that's out of the way now. Looking back on your time in office, re-election is here. Time has flown by so fast. What has been your biggest accomplishment in office?
Well, I think one of my biggest accomplishments has been having the opportunity to serve on the Financial Services Committee, which is an exclusive committee in Congress, and being able to be actively involved when this pandemic hit to provide resources, especially in helping design the stimulus package and the PPP for small businesses, you know, and to make sure that our universities get funded that was desperately needed. And the stimulus is trying to put money into everyone's hand that, you know, lost their jobs and so forth. That was a lot of work, you know, a lot of late nights and everything else. But when you have a pandemic like this hit and millions of people are unemployed and people need health care, it's great. And I think the other thing that another great accomplishment was to fight off the Republican onslaught on the HCA. When I went to Congress 3.5 years ago, one of the things I wanted to do, because I've been in the insurance business all my career, other than when I was coaching at Florida State, is to make sure that we fix and let the Affordable Care Act survive, because I know how critical it was for people with pre-existing conditions, and especially in the agricultural area, because of what we were able to do for 1890 institutions, which Florida A&M is one of those 1890 institutions, and getting the funding that they need to provide scholarship and recruit more kids into the agricultural industry. So I've had a great 3.5 years, and so I've been able to work across party lines with my colleagues.
Why do you want to go back? And with this being re-election, what would be the number one thing you plan to tackle?
Well, I think that it's always, you know, when I do surveys, still the number one issue in this district is health care. And so the number one thing that I will continue to attack is to strengthen and make sure I join the president on the Affordable Care Act with his commitment to maybe putting in his budget about $3 trillion into the Affordable Care Act so that people would have more access and we can lower premiums. I think health care is the most important thing that people are thinking about. And so that's one of the things that I want to do. And the second thing that's important to me is equal pay for equal work for women, to make sure that we resolve that issue. We pass it out of the House. Senate, you know, of course, is sitting on a whole lot of stuff, about 135 odd bills. You know, there's something that we really need to do in this day and time. Now, trying to get out, which I would like to name it after him, the Voting Rights Act of 2020, and try to name that after the late John Lewis, a good friend. And so we need more help with COVID relief. Those are the things that are critically important to me. And if I had to add something outside of them, I would say that because I'm in Florida and I chaired Natural Resources when I was in the House, is to make sure that we still continue to preserve our environment for future generations. Those are some of the things that are utmost important to me as a seek re-election.
This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes, chatting with U.S. Representative Al Lawson. When it comes to the reckoning about police brutality and what some see as the unchecked power of law enforcement, qualified immunity and all, what does police reform look like to you, especially in the light of the defund police movement?
Well, you know, I was just on a call with several police officers yesterday on a Zoom call. And I told him my position is not to defund the police. My position is that we need to set standards. We need to set standards for police officers all over the country, you know, to get rid of no-knock warrants, you know, to make sure that we get rid of chuck holes. There was no problem for them to be there. When you think about Breonna Taylor got shot in her own place, that shouldn't have happened. And the chuck hole that was used to kill George Floyd, which is called an uproar in America, I co-sponsored the Justice in Policing Act. And I think that's a very good thing. We have to make sure that we get this thing through the Senate. You know, I think they will. And so as a result, come here in August, I think they will. And I mean, it's significant. And I've talked to a lot of police officers throughout the district, and they agree that we do need some standards. And I think that's some people outlawed some of the thing years ago. You know, I just want to make sure that that the standards are set people got to look back at themselves, and they got to look at what they are doing and how they arrest people and try to. It's too many people getting killed. And so we have to stop that, you know, and I think that we can.
How do you balance that with what has been attempted before, like traditional police reform and proposals to reform police that hasn't really picked up steam, but we continue to see, like, you know, what we've been seeing and that caused the unrest, like George Floyd?
Well, we have to set standards to restore the trust. You know, when I was growing up, the police was our friends, you know. Even though I grew up in a period of segregation, but you didn't have a lot of this stuff going on, what you're seeing today. What has happened more than so than anything else, the reason why I think that we can restore this trust is it's just not African Americans. It's people of color. It's white Americans. Everybody's concerned about it, and it's gone globally, you know. So I think when you have something like that and people demanding, you know, young people are demanding, you know, just like I marched with the students from Parkland, you know, when they came to the Capitol, listen at their concerns, spend time with them. Young people are making a difference in terms of saying we want these issues heard. We want you to do something about it. And I think that's what we should do. You have kids now who are wondering if they will be next to suffer from police. And we don't want that to happen. We just have to be bold and practice good trouble, kind of like what John Lewis said. And, you know, John Lewis, his age, he's always out there with the kids trying to do something for them. And so we got to pull people out of the ivory towers in Congress and make sure they get more in control of Main Street.
And looking ahead as we wrap up, and I want to thank you so much for your time, your challengers, it's in this sprawling district of yours, your opponents, the Democrats, say that you are of the special interest and you have some Republican opponents as well. What's your assessment of the race?
One of the things I'm confident they're right about special interests, because my special interest is the people in this district. You know, one thing when you serve for a long time is you have a report card. Whether you're in Gaston County on the Chattahoochee River, whether you're down in Jacksonville on the St. John River and stuff, all of these counties that I've had the opportunity, I don't like to toot my own home, but I represent them real well. My opponent has no track record. L.J. Holloway, who was running, ran before 3 years ago. You know, and she's running again. She tell people she was a staffer in Congress with Congressman Carrie Meeks. And when I called Congressman Carrie Meeks, she said she was an intern in office. You know, you would think that with a lot of the things that I've been able to do in the Duval area, that people down there would be kind of satisfied. But only thing they say is that this is their seat. They don't want anybody from up here representing. Now, in terms of Chester, he was a pharmacist that I know of. He lost the pharmacy. We helped him get his pharmacy open. And I don't know a whole lot that he's done. I mean, he's not in any of those community organizations that I've been in the Jacksonville area. You know, in terms of he's saying, you said, I think earlier, that they're saying I'm with the special interest. Well, he's not been active at all. And so as a result of special interest, like I'm in the insurance field. So when I was not serving in Congress, sure, I'm concerned about what happened to our industry, our banking industry, any of those areas. And what they do, and I don't think they understand when you get in Congress, you know, people that you interact with who send representatives up there, quite natural, he would have to say that everybody in Congress, from Nancy Pelosi to McCollum in the Senate, everybody up there, I guess they say, is with special interests, you know, and that is just a way to try to come up with something because you have no issues. My opponents have no issues that I can think of. So I'm glad to have the competition. I think competition make you better, but they have no issue that they're running on. I've heard them, and they say, I'm going to go up, I'm going to do this and do that. Well, Congress is based on seniority, and the hardest thing that you have to do is work through seniority when you get there, because it doesn't happen. You can't go up there and say, I'm going to do this and do that. You have to go and pay your dues. Everyday people who get up in the morning and wonder how they're going to pay their rent or put food on the table, those are my special interests. And those are people that I work with, bringing food down, on the agricultural area. Even when I got on the financial service area, I asked the speaker to also put me on agriculture because I'm concerned about SNAP benefits, how kids are fed for free and reduced lunch. There are kids in Tallahassee and in Jacksonville, the school is 100% on free and reduced lunch. We have to make sure that on Fridays, they put food in the backpacks of students so they will have something to eat over the weekend before they get back to school. Those are my special interests, and I'm glad to have those special interests. And I'm out there working day in and day out. I always learn from John Lewis is that one, and I got this from my grandfather, that the greatest gift that you have in life is to help someone else. And that's been my career, and that's the reason why I've served in public office for over 32 years, 18 years in the House, 10 years in the Senate, and now serving in Congress.
Congressman Lawson, thank you so much for taking this time to speak with me. All the best on this campaign, and look forward to chatting with you soon.
Okay, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Congressman Lawson is facing several challengers on the Democratic side, LaShonda Holloway, former Duval County Democratic Party chair, and pharmacist Albert Dwayne Chester. The winner of the Democratic primary will face either Jacksonville businessman Gary Adler or Roger Wagner, whoever wins the Republican primary. You're listening to the Rotunda Podcast. The program is supported by listeners like you. Visit rotundapodcast.com and follow us on social media at Rotunda Podcast. Dr. Albert Chester is our next guest. He's challenging Congressman Al Lawson and is here to explain why.
First and foremost, I always tell people it's not necessarily running against an individual because I would like to think that all of us are running for what we believe in and for what we've been convicted to do. And I'm running against, police brutality, running for police reform, running against, a healthcare system that doesn't work for, millions of Americans. I'm running for, better economic development and better economic stability in the 5th Congressional District. So that's my motivation versus saying, who I'm running against and, to make it personal. But quick story about me. Born and raised in Jacksonville, Florida, had the privilege of going to Florida A&M, graduated from pharmacy, played football, played quarterback there, found myself, working as a pharmacist at Walgreens and, really wanted to do more with my life when it comes to service. And I always wanted to be a teacher, enjoy teaching, enjoy coaching. And I prayed and fasted and was moved and convicted to open up a school, the Capsule Institute. That's a post-secondary certification training program where we train people to become pharmacy technicians. And I put it in a neighborhood where I grew up around and spent a lot of time in and, had some great success, was really able to change the trajectory of many lives of my students and, start to see an improvement slightly in the neighborhood and, just saw a bigger need to open up a pharmacy. So now we became not only a training school or program, but we were also able to provide a service in a community that was, we talk about food deserts, but was also a healthcare desert. And that's something that I took great pride in and was very excited to do. But the calling became even greater when, I was in the neighborhood every day and I heard stories of my patients that, had difficulty for paying for their medications, difficulty with so many aspects of their life and really thought I could be a resource to them, in multiple facets and tried to reach out to, elected officials to see if I could, kind of be a liaison or a go-between to help people that were on the ground and then be able to explain that to people who were representing them. And, not to speak ill of anyone, but, maybe they were too busy. Maybe they just didn't understand. But, in that sense, I was kind of torn and kind of hurt because, people that are elected are supposed to be working for the people that vote for them. And I just didn't feel that and was moved and convicted to speak, really speak truth to power and talk about healthcare because that's the number one issue in our country, even before COVID. And, we have so many, seasoned or career politicians or people that are not in the healthcare industry making decisions about our healthcare. And, you know, when, you know, we think about it logically, it's like, you know, we need people in those chairs that live, eat, sleep, and drink healthcare, who knows healthcare on all or both ends of the spectrum, you know, from a, you know, 360 degrees.
What is the number one reason you are running for office? I'd imagine healthcare is a big factor considering your background as a pharmacist. But to the point that you mentioned, you try to engage current elected officials. You can name names, and you weren't happy with their response, and this was a trigger for you to jump in and try and be part of a solution?
Most definitely. I mean, you know, for the sake of courtesy, you know, I mean, just, you know, I won't mention anybody specifically because it was their office and different folks in their office. But to answer your initial question, yes, healthcare is number one to me. I believe we have to get to a place where we're Medicare for all. You know, people try to, you know, try to say we can't afford it. I say we can't afford not to do it. Economists from George Washington, from Harvard, from Yale, from all over have proven time and time again that Medicare for all will save us in the long run. And we can definitely afford it. And at a time when COVID has hit us like we've never seen before, especially in our lifetime, There's no better reason for me, I believe, than to go to Congress, but to achieve that Medicare for all, because we have a virus running rampant. Numbers are through the roof every day. We're breaking records. And we gotta be able to control this, because if our healthcare system is not fixed, it's going to affect the economy. It's going to affect education. And we're seeing that in real time right now. So, you know, that's what I'm going to fight for day one. We have to start moving and putting that in place.
So as you mentioned, this country is struggling to get a grip of the coronavirus pandemic, while others with less resources are able to slow the spread of the virus. What do you think America should do from this juncture forward?
I believe we should go on another shutdown to a degree where you're only going to get essentials. Make sure everybody has their mask on whenever they're out in public, and should not really begin to open up until we've had 14 days of declining cases, because, you know, hospitals, ICUs are, you know, almost completely full, and these cases is just not going to stop. And I'm a best practice person. And when you look at the best practices of other countries who have slowed, flattened, or almost, you know, completely stopped the spread or the numbers from just being astronomical, they've used these measures. And I believe we should follow the lead, because the sooner we do it, the better.
What do you plan to do differently for the voters of District 5? And on the same vein, like, you know, what do you plan to continue from the current office holder, that is Representative Al Lawson?
You know, as someone, 35 years old, owned a few successful businesses and seen, you know, problems from the ground floor, now to have a view from the top down, I look forward to bringing energy. I look forward to not being lukewarm, being very proactive in my leadership, and being able to, you know, give the people of the 5th Congressional District something they never had before. And that's access and communication and being transparent to them, to allow them not to just be accessible to me or me accessible to them, but to put them in position to be successful. Because every year the government gives grants and appropriations, and they make millionaires every year. But people in the 5th Congressional District are not receiving those funds because they're not aware of them. So, you know, people can promise, you know, the stars and the moon, but I'm a realist and I'm transparent. You know, I can promise biweekly emails to inform you what's going on in D.C. so you're always aware of what I'm doing. I can promise, you know, quarterly town hall meetings in every county during my time in office. I can promise we're going to build coalitions to in every county that's going to be that open line of communication that allows us to disseminate information about education, about criminal justice reform, about economic growth and development, and just different things, the environment, LGBTQ issues. I want to be able for everyone in the 5th Congressional District to always feel the presence of their congressman and know every day that I'm going to work hard every day for you and have your best interests in mind.
This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes chatting with Albert Chester, candidate vying to take over Congressman Al Lawson's seat in District 5.
When it comes to the issues of race and race relations, one of the biggest examples of the country's divide is in the place you're trying to go to. Advancement for people of color in the halls of Congress are rare. How do you think this country should address its historical and current problems with race relations?
Well, one thing I would say is that, you know, the representation should be a mirror of our country. And, you know, even though I'm a Democrat through and through, I always encourage people to vote for the best person. So, you know, if the best person is a woman, if the best person is an African-American male, the best person is a Hispanic Latino male or whatever, I believe we have to start focusing on getting the right people, the best people, no matter their color, no matter their creed, or even really their party. I encourage people to do that because, you know, the infrastructure we live in now, they kind of wage their bets on people not knowing and people just pretty much being on autopilot and voting for the names that they know versus researching and understanding that, hey, we can actually do better. Hey, here's someone who's more progressive. Hey, here's someone who actually speaks and has a plan to what we need or what I want to see in my community. So I would encourage, you know, because people they're not going up to D.C. just kind of on the humbug. They're being elected and voted up there. And I believe that we have to get our voters more informed and we will have better results and more representation that mirrors and mimics, you know, what we feel and what we need.
All right, Dr. Albert Chester, I'd like to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. Is there anything else that you'd like to add that I didn't ask?
I encourage people to read about their candidates. Ask me anything. I'm an open book. I love being transparent. And, you know, please vote Albert Chester on August 18th.
Thank you so much once again, and best of luck to you on the campaign trail.
Hey, I appreciate it. And please stay safe. This coronavirus is something serious and something deadly, something we've never seen before. So I pray you stay safe and so do your loved ones.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Finally, as we wrap up this week, a 21-year-old candidate running for state house sent an appeal on Twitter, looking for podcasts and news programs willing to interview him. I was tagged and said, I can squeeze him in. So we have Elijah Manley of Fort Lauderdale. He's challenging State Representative Bobby DuBose in House District 94. Manley is actually a former Broward County School Board candidate, and imagine that. He's already on his second campaign. So let's chat.
I was born and raised here in Fort Lauderdale, graduated from Fort Lauderdale High School, was attending Broward College up until, you know, the craziness happened this year. So I decided to take some time off again, but I'm studying history and public health and just really running for office because I'm not happy with the results I've seen or the lack of results I've seen in the community. And I'm not happy with the discussion in Tallahassee or with the way the discussion is framed in Tallahassee around certain issues like climate change, healthcare, environmental stuff, including water quality, as well as healthcare, which is probably the biggest for people. So, you know, I decided to run just knowing that my representative, in my opinion, was pretty absent from the community, hadn't faced a primary challenge his entire tenure in the House since he got to the House. So he was a little, you know, disconnected from the community, in my opinion. And that's why I ran, to really bring him back into connection with the district, but more importantly, to win the election.
So what makes you qualified for this office? What would you say as your best asset to take over from Representative Bobby DuBose?
Absolutely, yes. So the biggest discussion right now in the race is experience, obviously, because I'm young. So a lot of people are talking about experience, but I think—
How young are you?
I'm 21.
21 years old. All right. That is young.
Definitely. It wouldn't be the first time we have someone this young. I mean, we have someone who was elected in 2016. They were 21. They were Republican, though. And Andrew Gillum was 23 when he was first elected. So I wouldn't be the first person ever. But I see the biggest qualifier is several things. One is being a young person in this country right now. We face challenges that are not ordinary. We live in unordinary times, and we live in times that require really our voices to be heard, since we're growing up and we're going to face the consequences of the decisions being made by people who are not in our generation or who are not going to be here to witness the consequences of their decisions. So I do believe we need someone like someone in my generation, my age group, to at least have a seat at the table in making those decisions. We are about to be 40% of the voting block. I mean, in just 5 years, we'll be almost 50% of the voting block. And in 10 years, we'll be half of the voting block in this country or more. We're a growing demographic, but we don't really have any representation in government, which is really sad. No other generation has ever had that before. Boomers have held on to power for close to 50 years now. But that's not why I'm qualified for the seat. I'm qualified because I understand the issues facing this district because I've been forced to live them. Everything from poverty to homelessness to not having access to healthcare, which is my current situation, to climate change, which is going to really affect this next generation. So I've been in the community. This isn't my first time running for office, actually. But this is certainly, you know, I'm certainly in touch with the community. And there's no debate on this, for sure. I'm definitely more eloquent on the issues than my opponent. I have a really extensive platform. I'm able to debate these issues extensively and eloquently. And I really understand them. And I do believe that if I'm sent to Tallahassee, I'll be able to deliver results because of the type of person I am, the personality I have, the way I understand these issues, and being able to work across the aisle. So I'll be able to get more done for this district than the incumbent will be able to or has done so far.
All right. Well, I just wanted to touch base with you very briefly based on your call and people tagging me that you're one that is seeking office and I should have on the program. So I just want to thank you for taking this time to speak with me here on the Rotunda, and I wish you all the best on those remaining weeks of the campaign. All right, there is so much more to cover, but this will be it for this edition of the Rotunda. Special thanks to Congressman Al Lawson, Dr. Albert Chester, and Elijah Manley for joining the program. Remember, the primary election is August 18th, and I hope each and every one of you are getting out there to vote. Remember to follow the Rotunda on social media at Rotunda Podcast. You can find me at Trimmel G. Also, check us out at rotundapodcast.com, where you can contribute to this program and suggest topics and story ideas. Be sure to join us next week for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Trimmel Gomes.